80. Let us begin a new topic, and that is the history and the laws and the ideas behind the amazing holiday of Chanukah. Let's begin with a timeline. Where are we historically when this holiday, the events of this holiday that we celebrate, which is interesting because there's many events that happen to us post the Torah, or actually in the Torah, that we don't make a holiday out of. So there's going to be something unique about this particular holiday that makes it stand out for the Jewish people that we make a holiday about it. Right? It can't just be miracle. I mean, miracles are important, but we're going to see there are many miracles that happen for us and have happened for us since then that we don't make a holiday out of, especially an A-day holiday. So we're going to have to figure out, God willing, what it was or what it is about Chanukah, this time of the year, that the Chazal decided it should become a Jewish holiday. And we're going to have the same question next semester, those people who will be joining us, for the holiday of Purim. Purim as well. So we'll see there's something unique. Are we able to close that door? Sorry, if possible. Without squishing my friend Adar. Okay. So where are we historically? So we're in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, and the second one, to be precise, the second temple in Jerusalem. The Purim story precedes this holiday, and occurred in between the first and second temple. After the Jewish people survived that incredible miracle of the Purim story, the hidden miracle, as we shall see, the Nes Nistar, a couple hundred years later, an open miracle happened for us whilst we were actually in Israel itself. Okay? So in 353 BCE, before the Common Era, the second temple is built. The Greeks, 353 BCE, okay, which corresponds to the Jewish year of 3408. Okay? Then came the Greeks, Syrian Greeks, and overtook Israel, and the Greek era begins, and 199 BCE, Antiochus III of Syria controls the land of Israel. So 319, the Greek era begins, and the Greeks start to conquer, and they come in and they overtake the land of Israel, and it didn't start too bad. However, when an individual in 175 BCE called Antiochus IV takes over, then problems seem to happen. And 168, Antiochus IV comes in, desecrates the temple. A few years later, a band of Jews called the Hashmonaim, the Hasmoneans. You went to Hasma? So did I. I was also. The Hashmonaim period, 165 BCE, the Hasmoneans conquer, and there is a miracle. What that miracle is, we're going to discuss. There's actually a couple of miracles that happen to the Jewish people. The famous one, of course, we'll see, are the lights of the menorah that lasted for 8 days. Okay? And there was enough oil for 1 day. Why that is an 8-day miracle, we're going to have to see. Because if you look at it, technically, it shouldn't be 8-day miracle. It should be a 7-day miracle, because they had enough oil for 1 day. So there are hundreds of answers on the rabbis as to why we celebrate it for 8 days as opposed to 7 days, when actually the miracle really was 7 days. But we'll discuss when we get there. The Hashmonaim rule, okay? Eventually, the Romans, who came after the Greeks, and eventually they take over. And of course, in the Jewish year 3862-68, the Romans destroy the second temple. So for a couple hundred years, as you can follow the timeline, we actually managed to keep out the Greeks and push them out of the way. You know, Adar, there's a seat up front. Come, move that chair to the side and come sit up front. We have two seats up front. So we actually managed to push the Greeks out,
and have a temporary solution to all our problems right until the Roman times, and the Romans, who pretty much took over not just physically but also hashkafically, also their outlook of life from the Greeks, they're the ones that destroyed the temple. Okay, so that's the timeline that we're dealing with, the second temple, and the Greeks have come in, and we'll see that they, now we have to, there's many questions just by looking at that. First of all, why do they attack the temple? Why don't they just start slaughtering Jews, which is usually the tradition of people that don't like us? And we're going to see, actually, the Greeks didn't really have a problem with us, per se, and actually liked us. What they wanted to do, we're going to see, is to enlighten us as to their ways. And the Jewish people fought off their philosophy and had problems with their philosophy. It ended up becoming a war, because when people don't listen to you, you end up fighting them, right? But the war and the physical threat of the Greeks was not really the main concern. Unlike the Purim story, where we were physically threatened by the Persians, specifically Ahasuerus and Haman. Over here, it wasn't a physical threat. It started as a philosophical threat. Okay? So we're going to see that as we go through. Let's begin with the Rambam in the Laws of Hanukkah on page 80 at the bottom. Everyone follow inside? Says the Rambam, by Sheini, Kesher Malchu Yavan, when Yavan, which are the Greeks, when they had the Malchus, they ruled, Gazru Gezerus al Israel, they made, so they took over Israel, and they made certain decrees against the Jewish people. Okay? They didn't allow the Jewish people to learn Torah, or the mitzvos, and to observe certain mitzvos. So they were challenging us spiritually. And they started to make decrees against them. And they took their money and their daughters. And then they entered the holiest place for the Jewish people, which is a political statement. And they attacked and went inside the Heichal, and they made certain things over there, the Timuat Horos, and they made that which was pure, impure, the Tzalem Yisrael, they gave a lot of tzar, difficulty to the Jewish people, mode, Bipnem. Ad, and they made a lot of trouble for us, and we were very, very distressed. Ad, Shirichem Aleim Elokei Avoseinu, until, says the Rambam, our God, the God of the Jewish people, had mercy upon us, Roshia Miyadam Vitzilam, and saved us from their hands. So that short piece of Rambam has given us a quick summary of what happened. We have the second temple, and we are in Golus. The Yavan, the Greek exile, as it's called, or when the Greeks took over. Now, it's interesting, we usually refer to the word galut, Golus, exile, as being physically removed from a country, specifically Israel. Interestingly, we're actually in Israel during this time. So this is referred to as a galut, as an exile, but we are in the land of Israel whilst this happens. Which means that it can't just be a physical exile from the land. It's also going to be that we were spiritually exiled from our source. And that's what the Greeks did. So exile doesn't literally mean the Jewish people kicked out. It can mean that as well. Okay? As in the Babylonian exile, who kicked us out. However, over here, the Jewish people were in the land of Israel, but we were exiled, and we were still in Galut, while still in the land of Israel. Okay? So exile doesn't just mean physically kicked out of the land, it means spiritually we were cut off and disconnected from our source. So they came in, they made certain decrees against us, and they stopped us learning Torah, we'll see why. And they stopped certain mitzvot. We'll see specifically which mitzvot they stopped us doing, knowing full well those were the mitzvot that kept us being Jewish. Not all mitzvot are the same. Different mitzvot give us different powers and abilities. When non-Jews want to stop us being Jewish, the first thing they do is they outlaw learning Torah. Okay? That's one of the first things they do, knowing full well that Torah is what connects us to our people. They also stop us keeping Shabbat. They also stop us doing Bris Milas. And interestingly enough, they also stop us tracking the moon, which means our holidays and our calendar. Because once you take Jewish people out of the calendar, as we discussed already this semester, you've stopped them in a very big way as well. Because you can't track time, you can't track holidays. You can't keep holidays if you can't track the time. And you don't keep holidays, we ain't being so Jewish. Okay? So those we'll see. They also used to take the young Jewish women eventually away from us. And before a woman was to be wedded, she was actually handed over to the Greek governor and violated. Okay, so before we look at the Greeks and say, wow, they did so much for us, and Greek culture and democracy and everything else, our problems weren't just they stopped us trying to be Jewish, they also violated the Jewish women of their day. Not a Greek fan anymore, not a fan of Greek life, as is big on many campuses, but Baruch Hashem, not this one. Good, you shouldn't be. Okay? Says the Gemara, page 81, a very famous Talmud. By the way, we'll see, it's not so simple that it was Jew against Greek. It was more of a triangle. There were the Jews, there were the Greeks, and then there were the Greek Jews. I don't mean the Jews from Greece. I mean Jews that actually settled on the side of the Greeks. And I'll tell you something which may sound extraordinary to you, but if you think all these Jews, everyone keeps Hanukkah, lights the candles, I would hazard a guess, and you'll understand this more when we understand actually what was going on Hanukkah, that your average Jew today, if there were to be another battle like this going on, they would probably side more with the Greeks than they would with the Jews. Many, many Jews connected more with the Greeks and their philosophy and their outlook than with the Jews. So the Jews weren't just fighting the Greeks, physically and philosophically. They were fighting the Jews who affiliated with the Greeks. They had more of a problem with them than they did with the Greeks sometimes. As the famous expression goes, sometimes we are our own worst enemies. So we'll see many Jews were attracted to Greek culture and Greek life and Greek outlook. That's to such a degree that I think today most Jews, if they really understood the story of Hanukkah, which they don't, unfortunately, or in their cases maybe fortunately, they would probably say, you know what? We agree with the Greeks more than we do with the Jews.
It's like what's going on with like Natori Kurdim.
Not exactly. I would say on a broader scale today, most Jewish people will more affiliate with the philosophy of the non-Jewish philosophies than they would the Jewish ones. Right. No, they're just completely bonkers. Right. All right. Do you have that word here? Bonkers. Is that in America? I think you use the expression nuts. I think it's not your expression. Yes, Amanda.
I just don't get, like, how is that our fault if, like, we connect more, if you didn't have a connection to, like, philosophical ideas of a different group, like,
right.
That's not something you can control.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes, you can. If you study Torah and get a philosophy that comes from Judaism as opposed to non-Jewish society and non-Torah sources, you will affiliate. What was going on then, they were abandoning their Jewish faith.
And they were
attaching to the Greek culture and philosophy. In other words, Judaism isn't just like acts. There's also a philosophy, an idea, a thought, a way of life. By the way, the Greeks were also very into what we would call today child abuse, pedophilia. Right? They would actually take young boys, a Greek philosopher, sometimes even spoke about it, and would abuse. I mean, back then it was seen as like a teaching thing, but that was also very, very common. As well. That was another big problem the rabbis of the day had with the Greeks. Yeah.
If you knew both sides, if the Jews today knew both sides and they were.
Yeah, no, that's not a good thing. Yeah, that's not a good. I'm not saying that's a compliment, that's a very sad thing. I'm saying that's not a good thing. I'm saying what a Jew should do is actually affiliate to Jewish law, Jewish philosophy, Jewish life. I'm saying, unfortunately, if today they understood this battle, right, and they saw it, they were probably, in their ignorance, attached themselves to the Greek side rather than the Jewish side. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. They should actually, what they should do is affiliate to the Jewish side, because they don't know what Jewish life and philosophy says. I'm saying based upon their
knowledge
of Jewish life, what Judaism represents, they would probably side with the Greeks, unfortunately. Yeah? Okay. So the Gemara, and there's no whole tractate on Hanukkah. The laws of Hanukkah are found in Shabbat. Does anyone know why they would be found in Shabbat? What's the connection? Not so difficult. What's the connection why Hanukkah will be found in the tractate of Shabbat? Yeah, Devorah? Candles, yeah. Yeah, the candle thing seems to connect. So while we're discussing the laws of lighting Shabbat candles, the Gemara says, you know, one second, there's some other lights we need to talk about. And those are the lights of the Menorah Hanukkah. Okay? Now, just so we understand it again, the lights we light on Hanukkah aren't there as a remembrance of the menorah. Okay? The menorah has how many lights on it? Right, seven. Three, three, and one in the middle. We light eight candles on Hanukkah to remember the miracle that lasted 8 days. That miracle happened to involve the menorah. And actually, it's going to be a very important part, what the menorah represents. We're going to see that actually the menorah really represents us a lot more than the Magen David, the Star of David. Right? Everyone walks around with Stars of David as that. But really, the menorah, which goes back to, obviously, the Torah, and goes back historically to when the Jewish people left Egypt, and we're in the Midbar, the menorah represents us a lot more than the Star of David. Star of David, actually, we're not so sure of the sources, and there's only the earliest physical representation we have of the Star of David. Anyone know? Actually, I saw it this summer. The oldest one is actually in the Maral Shul. Right? In Prague, there is a Star of David over there. Okay, which is, historically speaking, pretty recent, you know. The menorah, however, goes back thousands of years. And we'll see the menorah wasn't just a light, it represents the Jewish people. Okay, specifically the light of Torah, which is why the Greeks went in to put that light out. The Greeks wanted to extinguish the light of Torah, which is represented by the menorah. So they went in and they defiled the oil that lit the menorah. They were making a point. They first wanted to enlighten us with their Greek philosophy, and there was a lot of good that came with it. But ultimately, they wanted us to replace or to add our Torah philosophy into their philosophies, and that we couldn't do. And so they attacked the light, the shemen, as we shall see, of the menorah. Okay? So we're going to see that this light of the menorah represents the Jewish people. Says the Gemara, follow inside. First, ask a very famous question, which you'll hear in every Hanukkah Devar Torah. My Hanukkah! What's Hanukkah? And you're like, it's pretty obvious. What kind of question is that? So the Gemara doesn't say it's so obvious. Right? It's not mentioned in the Torah. Happened later. What is it? What's Hanukkah? My Hanukkah. And it says, "Shenichnasu Yevanim leHeichal." When the Greeks entered inside the Heichal, the Holy of Holies, Timu Kol Hashmanim, they made impure all of the oils, right? In order for oil to be used in the menorah, you needed what kind of oil? Shemen Zayit. One more word. Zach, the purest of oils. There were other things that oil, what was it made from? Olives. There were other, you could make oils from a lot of things, but specifically olive oil had to be used. Now, you could make oil from many things, but olive oil is actually mentioned in the Torah, and it had to be the purest of the pure. We'll see there are various ways you can make, well, it's actually one way. There are different levels of olive oil. You have the first, the second, and the third pressings. The first pressing is when you just crush the olive, right? It's actually done en masse, not individually. And they would crush it, and the first drops that would come out were the purest of all oils, and that's what was used in the menorah. Then he would crush it again, and with the oil came out a little bit of sediment, and the third crushing, it was quite pulpy. So the pulpy one could be used for various things, even in the Beis HaMikdash. But the menorah had to have the Shemen Zayit Zach, the first pressing, the purest of all the olive oils, okay, which obviously represents our menorah has to be pure, and the mitzvah of Talmud Torah has to be the purest thing that we do, okay? And the lighting has to be pure, because when you had sediment in it, it didn't burn as well, okay? And we need it to burn perfectly and purely. So in order to have it, the Kohen Gadol, the Kohenim, would have a chatima, they would have a stamp on it, you see? In order to use the oil, I had to make sure that it wasn't tamei, wasn't, didn't get involved and become impure. So what the Greeks did when they came in was they just like trashed the place, pretty much. They did a number of other things, including bringing a pig inside, but they came along and they broke all the seals, okay? And when you break the seal, you cannot use it. How long do you think it takes to take new olives, crush them, get the pure, and bring it up to Yerushalayim? How long does that take? It takes 8 days. Which is why the miracle lasts for 8 days. You see, they had enough oil to last the next batch to come up into Yerushalayim. Right? And that took that amount of time for them to say, hey, we're out of pure oil. And they found one small amount, which itself is a miracle. And then it took another 7 days in order to get a new batch crushed, prepared, hechshed, and taken up into Yerushalayim. Okay? That's why... They found enough for 1 day. The miracle was it lasted for 8 days. Okay, or that 1 day and seven more. 1 plus 7. So why does it suddenly just stop? They ran out? The answer is the miracle lasted that long because that's how long it took to get new olive oil in. You understand? From outside Yerushalayim up into Yerushalayim. Right? It's a technical thing. Right? We need new oil. We only have 1 day's worth. It lasts about a time. Okay, we have the new oil. Miracle over. We don't need the 1 day oil anymore. Okay, we have the new oil. Olive oil that's been shipped in. New oil that was piped in. By the way, we see that wars over oil aren't a new thing. That was a joke, by the way. Whenever you're ready to get that one. Yes, hello.
So we light them for 8 days, but where did, like...
So they lit. They needed it. Well, there's a lot more answers, but they needed it to light. They needed this 1 day to last that long because every day the menorah is lit.
Right. I'm saying now we light the menorah.
Oh, very, very good. Because we're remembering the 8 days of miracle that happened back then.
But why were they lighting the menorah back then? What were they lighting it off of? Like, why was it their thing, like their mitzvah that they needed to light it for?
It wasn't their mitzvah. That's how long. That's how long it took for them to get the new oil in.
But I'm saying, like, why did they? They just lit it, like.
They didn't have enough.
Like, why did they need to? But why was the menorah there in the first place?
What is the other thing? The menorah is part of the Beis HaMikdash. The menorah is at the Beis HaMikdash. That's the Mishkan. Think of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, the gold menorah. The Kohen Gadol lights the menorah every single day. Okay? And one of those lights lasts 24-7. Okay? Mm-hmm. Which was the Ner Tamid. Okay? So there's a mitzvah to have this light on all the time. Okay? He's like, ran out of oil. Oil is destroyed. What are we going to do? So, we've got to bring in new oil. How long does that take? 8 days. They found enough for 1 day. Miracle. The 1 day lasts for 8 days. Okay? Now, if they found enough for 1 day, this is my original question, then why don't we celebrate the holiday for 7 days? Because the miracle is really 7 days, because they had enough for 1 day. So some say finding the oil itself was a miracle. Some say they divided the oil into 8 parts, something that's how long it would take, and they actually had a fraction in, so the miracle was every day, it lasted for an entire day. Can you get that? It was like a little bit, an eighth, that lasted for an entire day every day, when it should have only lasted for an eighth of a day. Can you see that? That's another answer to that question. There's many, 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 many other answers to that question. Okay? But we'll look at those a little bit later. Okay, says the Gemara, my Chanukah, כשנכנסו יוונים להיכל צימו כל השמנים, they defiled all the oil שבהיכל, or שגבר מלכוס בית חשמנאי, when the house of the Hasmoneans, these were the Kohanim of the day, one house of them anyway, Nitzchum, they managed to remove this Greek army. Right, this small band of Jews, very small group, managed to push out an entire Greek army, which, by the way, was also a miracle. It was which we mentioned in the Al HaNisim prayer, that a small group managed to push out a much larger group from the Hegel. Interesting enough, that's the miracle we refer to in Al HaNisim, in the Amidah. Bless you. Right? We don't actually mention this miracle of the menorah over there. Interesting enough, we'll see why later on. But the miracle of the small, the few, this small band of zealot Jews who were willing to fight, like most Jews weren't willing to, most Jews probably didn't want to. Okay, but this small group did. The Nitzchum, they won. They managed to remove the Greeks. But kuvlo matzu ela pach echad. They went searching. We've got to light the menorah. Right, that's our symbol. That's our sign of Torah. That's our sign of light. And we, the Kohanim, we need to show that we're back in. And we've won. And that's how we raise our banner. We light the menorah. What did they find? One little solitary pach of shemen. One small vessel of oil, shel shemen, sheya munach b'cho samo, which had the seal of the Kohen Gadol on it, shel Kohen Gadol, v'lo hayaba ela hadlik yom echad. They could only find enough for one day, says the Gemara. Nase vo neis. A miracle happened for our people. This was a very symbolic miracle. Remember, this part of the miracle didn't keep us alive, per se. This was a symbolic miracle. Okay, Hanukkah is a very symbolic holiday, which is why this is the only holiday where you take the mitzvah and you publicize it. What do I mean by that? Put it in the window. Do you have to build your sukkah on the front lawn? No. Do you have to eat your matzah by the window so everyone sees you eating the matzah? No. Do you have to fast publicly? And the answer is no. This is a very unusual thing. There's a specific mitzvah over here to be mefarsem es ha'nes, to publicize it. We'll see that the reason is because this is also a political holiday. We have to publicize this miracle. We're making a point. This miracle was done as a public display of the Jewish people's attachment to their Torah. So this is the only mitzvah I can think of where there is a specific mitzvah to do it at the most publicized time. What does that mean? When people are passing your house, or people are usually out. Nighttime, when it's dark, you light the light and you actually put it in their face. It's an interesting thing. It's a very non-Jewish thing to do, but we Jews do it. Right? It's not usually our custom to go out and go in your face with our mitzvot, but here we do. And there's something about the nature of this holiday, what happened, and the mitzvah of menorah, that actually we have to be mefarsem. Part of it we're going to see is mida keneged mida, measure for measure. They wanted to publicize their anti-Jewish ways, so we publicize to this day that we, the Jewish people, our light is still burning. Our light is still burning. So we actually put our menorah out when most people are still just coming home. Really, that's the mitzvah. The optimum time to this mitzvah is when it's nighttime. It's a nighttime mitzvah. And we go into the darkness and we light the light. Specifically a time when most people are passing. By the way, the best way to do this mitzvah, which most people do not do, but in Yerushalayim they do, is to not put it in your window, but put it outside your door, outside your gate. And to this day, many people know, so that's actually the best way to do it, and outside, in the public thoroughfare.
In the mall.
Out there, well, the mall already is, you know, that's because you got like a nativity scene, right? So like, whoa, you got your nativity scene, right? You got your little baby Jesus with your donkey and your cow, so we're going to put them up. So, and that may be a good thing, right? But really the mitzvah is to do it from your home. That's actually the mitzvah. The mitzvah is ner ishu beso. It should be a person, their home, outside. And nowadays, for various reasons, we don't want to antagonize, so we do it inside a home, but we put it by the window, passing the public thoroughfare so people see it. Trust me, that's an unusual thing. I mean, fast has become like the regular thing, but we actually do it in a very public way. We publicize that miracle. Like, we don't do our Pesach Seder by the front window. Hey, everyone, eating my matzah. I'm leaning, drinking four cups of wine. We don't do that. You can do that. No one has to see you. That's for you and your family. However, here, we're in your face, as you Americans would say so eloquently. Yes, Michal?
What if you live in like, an anti-Semitic place where it imposes danger?
If you live in an anti-Semitic place, you are permitted to do it in a place where it will not cause... You still fulfill the mitzvah that way. Yes. And actually, that's one of the reasons that they actually bring from the outside into the inside. But if you live in a place where it's accepted, right, then you should put it in the window. Now everyone does it, right? Who does it in America? If they're not doing that, they're doing their light bulbs. Like, weep, 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 twist. Weep, 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 twist. Weep, weep, twist. You should actually not use light bulbs. Unless you have to. There was one year when I had to use a light bulb. A light bulb is not the best way to do it, but will suffice. My wife took the liberty of giving birth to one of my daughters on Hanukkah. I protested, but she demanded that she give birth right then. I said, can't you wait 8 days? She says, no. She says, no, I can't. So I had to actually light the menorah in the hospital. You're not allowed to make fire in hospitals. They're quite adamant about that. What?
Yeah, in the window.
Yeah, outside the hospital, I wasn't at home. And I wanted to light the menorah, so the mitzvah actually is the Baruch Hashem actually provides an electronic bulby one, which in that circumstance would suffice. But your home should not be the bulby menorah that you put in your window. Okay, there's a shaila with Mickey Bracha over a light bulb, as opposed to. And by the way, that's also going to work as a side point, by the way. If you're in a hospital and you want to light Shabbos candle, which will probably happen to most of you at some point, you know, my wife also, you know, had to light to turn on a light, ideally an incandescent, not a what are these called? Fluorescent. Thank you. That's closer to fire. That will suffice for your lighting. You should have that in mind and turn on a light switch. That will suffice. That is not really what one should do in their home, but in a place like a hospital, where you're stuck in hospital for Shabbos, right? Hopefully for good reasons, like giving birth. Then you would be permitted to light candles. You should not light candles in hospitals, okay? Because that's how you burn down hospitals, which we Jews are not so into, funnily enough. Right? Yes?
Put a light bulb one, but like, say you, like in your home, you have that one in the window, and then in the back window where like most people don't see it, but you have your real one.
Yeah. So I'm just saying it's irrelevant. You shouldn't... there's no issa, thou shalt not light electric light bulbs as well as a menorah, but you should use a proper menorah for the mitzvah, to be mefasam and nes. But we're going to see the mitzvah is to show people the menorah.
You can move the menorah afterwards.
You are allowed to move the menorah. And there's an interesting law when it comes to the menorah, we'll see. Unlike the Shabbat candles, that ein reshut l'shtamesh mehem, Ella Lorot and Bilvad. You cannot get benefit from a Hanukkah menorah. That means you cannot read by the light of a Hanukkah menorah, using the light exclusively from a Hanukkah menorah. They are there to be seen. They are Kodesh Haim. They are holy. So you should try to light right there at a visible place, and it should stay lit. We'll see if you don't fall into the night time. Okay? We'll see how long, a minimum of I think 30 minutes, I believe, after nighttime, in order to fulfill the mitzvah, which is why in Erev Shabbat, you actually have to light, because you light early, obviously, because it's Shabbat already, with extra long candles that last, so you actually go 30 minutes, a minimum. Those little, like, birthday candle things they use, we always use great little color candles, they should not be used. You should use candles that last at least 30 minutes, we'll see, after nightfall, in order to fulfill the mitzvah. So Erev Shabbos, those candles won't even work. They don't do the job. They're good on birthday cakes, but they are not good for the mitzvah of Hanukkah. Little tiny, small little candles. They use colored ones that you grew up with. I used to shove inside your menorah and they're like break in half every time. You know those ones? Right, yeah, we'll go over that. Ideally, you should actually try to use olive oil. Nowadays, by the way, it's very simple. You know, olive oil is quite easy. That's the real way, but candles do suffice. Candles do suffice for the miracle. You just need light from a candle that will work. But I believe olive oil is the good way to do it, actually. Yes, Devorah. So you're fine. So we're going to see when it comes. We're going to do the laws of Hanukkah. We're going to get there. But actually, that suffices. Ishan Rabbi, so the one house, different opinions actually. One, he actually suffices and fulfills the mitzvah for the entire home. That is the Rambam actually. Interesting, the Sfarim actually don't go to the Rambam over here, and they say that everyone has to light their own menorah. Yeah. So if you are not at home, there's still a mitzvah to do it. And over here, we see difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. The Sephardim, many of them, are some. I didn't, as a single man, I didn't. My mother lit. And you can rely upon that lighting. Ashkenazim actually will all light and will make a bracha themselves. So you should still light. If you're living here, and this is your dorm, and you're living here, you should light over here. And I think they set up. Now in the dorms, they set up menorahs, everyone, the yeshivas, everyone lights. Many Sephardim, however, go like their tradition, and they will rely upon their parents' lighting, because it's each and every base, so a person in his home, in their home. What are you? I can't hear you. What? Your father's Chabad. I don't know what Chabad is. I think the Chabad means they do actually light, I believe. And you set up your own menorah, but I don't know. You have to ask your CLOR, your Chabad local Orthodox rabbi on that one. Your claw. Yeah, you see what tradition is. I believe they do light. They do light. I think so. No? I think they do. No, why should I have off for Hanukkah? You want to study Torah during Hanukkah? That's like you should actually be in school. You be studying Torah. Yeah, nice try. Okay. Let's finish with the Gemara. Nason bones, a miracle was done. Look inside. Look at me. Vehed liku mimenu shmona yamim, and a miracle occurred, and they lit for 8 days. Look at this. Very interesting words. Follow the Gemara. This is fascinating. Lashana acheres, the next year, kavum, they set up. Vasuam yamim tovim b'halal uvahoda'a. The next year, they set up that these should be days of thanksgiving with halal. What's halal? So halal is the prayer that we say of thanksgiving for miracles that happen in the land of Israel. Aye, we say halal on Pesach as well. Well, that only applies for miracles that occurred after Har Sinai. A miracle like getting out of Egypt that happened pre-Har Sinai, although it happened outside of Israel by getting out of Egypt, we still say halal for. But post-Har Sinai, for great miracles that happened in the land of Israel, we say halal for. And so strong, they actually say it for the entire 8 days. So these 8 days became days of joy. We say halal. We don't do tachanun. We don't do a spade. We don't do eulogize. These are days of joy for the Jewish people right through Jewish history. Here's a good question for you. Why do we have to wait till the following year? What do you think? Why does it say, think about it, that Lashana Cheres, the next year, it's a very difficult question, is related to something we learned in the first class of this semester. Yes, Stephanie Zerbib. Wow. Fantastic. What they did was, they say, they needed to wait 1 year, about the same thing with Purim. They waited 1 year. You see, you can't just make a new Jewish holiday. But what they did was they waited a year, they actually came to that time again. When we talk about the time has certain energy that goes with it, they waited 1 year, the rabbis of the day, and they said, wow, it's Hanukkah. They felt the same energy, and they said, this is the time, this is what Rav Dessler says, and they felt this energy existed in that time, which was a year later, because that's wait 1 year to feel it. You can't feel it 3 months earlier because the time itself. So they waited another shana till the year repeats itself. Remember the word shana means year and to repeat. Question for your midterm. So they waited a year and they felt it. And they said, yeah. Yeah, this is the energy. And this is what we need to do. And that became a year later the holiday for the Jewish people that we still celebrate with great joy, with gratitude, with halel v'hoda'ah, with words of praise and enjoyment, and eating a vast amount of donuts and putting on 20 pounds. Okay? And of course we eat donuts because they are delicious, but they are an oily thing. So these are customs to eat oily foods. Remember the oil, okay? And the latkes as well. Okay, and enough oil is in the latke that if you squeeze it, you could light the oil for 8 days out of one single latke. Okay, and that is the custom that has come from the day itself. And we're also going to discuss this whole dreidel game that they played. This dreidel thing is not just a toy that we play with, it actually represents something as well, and we'll be discussing that, God willing, over the next weeks or so. Yeah. So miracles that happen in Eretz Yisrael for the Jewish people en masse. Okay, we can say halal for halal is established, which is why many people, by the way, will put halal on Yom HaTzma'ut for the miracle of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Some do, some don't. Yeah. But that's the theory behind it. But I said, well, there's an exception. We weren't in Israel for the exodus from Egypt, obviously. We just got out of Egypt. We say halal on Pesach, and the answer is, that was pre-Har Sinai. So the rule is, post-Har Sinai, after Har Sinai, miracles in Israel have the capability to have halal said for them, which is why, although Hanukkah happens many, many years later, it was a miracle. Half of the Jewish people, after Har Sinai, in Eretz Yisrael. Get it? Okay, let me give you your midterms, and we will pick this up, God willing, on...